Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
911 emergency.
Police.
Search goes on in San Francisco for the man known as the Zodiac Killer.
In New York, the search continues for the 44 caliber killer.
See if you can explain to me why I would want to be a Scientologist.
Betches Media presents.
Tell me we have a lead.
Stone Cold, no.
It was literally like the Hunger Games.
Not another true crime podcast.
What can I say? Tough titties.
It's all fun and games until someone gets hurt.
If you like weird shit, hello and welcome to the newest Betches podcast, not another true crime podcast, with me, your host, Sarah Levine, and my co-host, Hannah Perkins.
Yay!
Who's physically here in person today.
Yes.
It's a big deal.
In freezing New York.
Yes. If you've made it this far, you know that we're talking about all the sketchy shit your heart desires, stuff like scams, cults, conspiracy theories, and of course, crime.
Yep. Pretty much. That's what this is.
Yeah. If you made it this far, we want to thank you all for listening for a whole season. This is, unfortunately, the last crime we'll cover of season one.
Womp womp.
Pause for all your collective sadness. but we want to end it with a serious bang. Hannah, do you want to tell the listeners what they've won?
Oh, yes, please. hell yeah. So when we first started this podcast, we weren't really sure what case we were going to do at the end. We were kind of just winging it. And as it went on, we realized that the last episode has to be fire.
Yeah. I mean, all the episodes have been good thus far, if I may say so myself.
Not biased at all. But So once part one was released, we were basically flooded with about a zillion DMs. So many. You guys just slid right in. And we were told to cover a specific case. And we know a lot of people are obsessed with it. And we were like kind of weary about it. But we decided that we are going to give the people what they want, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what we're about.
Fuck it. Let's do it live. So anyways, we're going to be talking about the famous murder mystery of JonBenet Ramsey.
Yep, that's right. You asked for it, and you are going to get it.
Yep.
Thanks. Special thanks to literally the 91% of you guys on our Instagram poll who voted for 91. Us to cover this.
Wow.
Even though everyone I've talked to thinks they know who did it.
Yeah. Well, they just want to hear our take on it, right?
Yeah.
The hot takes.
It's true. That's why you're here.
Yeah.
But thank you guys. Special thanks from the bottom of my heart. This was a doozy to research and was the reason for many sleepless nights and a lot of information that I wish I could unknow.
Yeah. Honestly, Sarah
probably
and I
love
discussed.
You.
Yeah, we love you, but like Sarah and I discussed, this has ruined our life. So we're going to talk about child murder for you guys. We researched the shit out of this. Lots of research, like Sarah just said. We're going to try and break it down in the best way possible. It's a really, really complicated case with a lot of what the fuck moments, to be completely honest. So we decided to break this case down in two separate episodes.
Yeah, we're going to be doing two parts. This first one is pretty much just going to be all about the actual murder itself.
Yeah.
And then the second one, we're going to go into the investigation and what the fuck went wrong there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to talk about the theories in part two. As Hannah said, we did a lot of research. There's so much information on this. It's like information overload.
Yeah, it really is.
I personally got most of my information from a Vanity Fair article that was written in 1997 that was very long and thorough and well done.
Good job, Vanity Fair.
I also bought the book and read it. It's called Foreign Faction by A. James Koehler, who was a former lead investigator on the case. And then I watched that one CBS documentary that was like super biased, but I spent $10 on it, so I watched it.
Yeah, you have to do it at that point because you spent $10 on it. So I didn't watch the CBS one because you were watching that one. So
it was ridiculous.
I watched something on Amazon that I spent $3.99 on. So I was like, fuck, I have to at least get through two episodes.
What I watched was called The Case of JonBenet Ramsey.
Okay, I watched American Murder Mystery, the JonBenet Ramsey
interesting.
Case.
Yeah, was that the A&E one?
I think so. It's like a three-parter. It's very small.
Those two came out around the same time, and they both presented like vastly different theories.
Yep. And they're both very biased in their own special way. So yeah. That one I watched. I want to shout out Last Podcast on the Left because Marcus Parks did really good research on that. And I listened to that. And I also checked out this website that's oddly alarming, but very specific, called the JonBenet Ramsey Case Encyclopedia.
Oh, God.
Which has the, I know, which has the most detailed timeline ever recorded. I'm not even fucking kidding you.
Wow.
If JonBenet or John Ramsey or any member of that family took a shit, it's on there.
Wow.
So, I mean, I think it is.
Which is actually funny because we'll get into this in part two, but Foreign Faction does get into the fecal matter of one member of the Ramsey family.
Oh, that's true.
Definitely does go into who shits.
So there is actual shit on there. So shout out to the people who run that website.
Yeah. And like our other episodes, we will be sharing links to some of these sources on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NATC podcast. So you can read for yourself if you would like.
Yes, go do it. So I think the best place to start part one, and let me know if you agree, Sarah, is Christmas morning on 1996.
Yeah, let's have two Jewish girls relive Christmas morning.
Let's do it. We are automatically at a disadvantage here. So
okay, well, speak for yourself, because one time at Tomorrow World, Mom and Dad, stop listening now. But anyway, this one time at Tomorrow World, I took some Molly and I was like, what's it going to feel like? And the person was like, it's going to feel like you're a kid on Christmas. And I said, but I'm Jewish.
Did it feel like it?
Yeah, then it kicked in and I was like, I get it. It's Christmas.
Oh, wow.
But this Christmas will be much more devoid of joy than my Christmas religious experience.
Yeah, that sounds really spiritual. I'm really happy for you. You really found God.
I know,
that
I made it without converting.
You really did it. So now your parents can tune back in.
Yes.
Because, well, I mean, they can go off if they want. We're going to talk about a kid getting murdered. So it's up to them. Yeah. It's up to them.
Alrighty, so let's back it up to Christmas morning 1996 at the Ramsey house. It was pretty typical. The Ramsey family consists of several people, but only four female residents at the home. That's because John Ramsey has a few older children from a previous marriage. That's John Andrew Ramsey and Melinda Ramsey Long. Mm-hmm. They were living in Georgia at the time. But so in the Ramsey house in Boulder, we have JonBenet Ramsey, obviously.
Yeah.
Burke Ramsey, who was her 9-year-old brother at the time. And Patsy Ramsey, who's John's wife.
Yeah. So they get up, they open presents, they do the whole baby Jesus thing.
I am assuming. Let us know.
Again, had a disadvantage here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they do all that. Then what else?
Yeah. So the Ramsey family, as we mentioned, lived in Boulder in this gigantic 4-story, 7,000 square foot mansion.
Oh my God.
Which is actually pretty important because when we go through all the rooms of the case, it's really hard to get a mental picture. I kind of want to look up a diagram of this
blueprint.
House.
Yeah.
I need a blueprint because in the book I read, there were a lot of crime scene photos, but there was no blueprint of the house. And there's a back staircase, a front staircase. There's all this shit.
It's a huge house.
Yeah. So they're, in the scientific term, loaded.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're a really prominent family in the community. This was probably like your average rich person Christmas. Like I'm assuming lots of presents, Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Patsy, I know, really loved Christmas, so I'm assuming she went all out.
Yeah, she literally had a Christmas tree in every single room, according to that documentary I watched.
Oh my God.
Every single fucking room. I can't even think
of
the fire
tree?
Hazard.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was a real tree or a fake little mini one.
I feel
one.
Like the bugs would be... Actually, I don't really know. I've never had a Christmas tree.
I mean... bugs aren't usually a big problem, but watering that would be a pain in the ass.
You don't water the Christmas tree though, right?
It's dead. You could put some water in it.
You do?
Yeah, some of them have a watering hole thing.
Mind blown.
Wow.
But it's dead.
We really are at a disadvantage here.
Well,
there you go. So
we're doing the best we can.
We are trying here, and that is all that counts. It's definitely not a Charlie Brown Christmas. They're so rich. They have this home in Colorado, this giant home, and they have a vacation home in John's home state of Michigan. And they were going to take a private jet to the house in Michigan on the morning of the 26th, so the day after Christmas.
Also pause, because you can be rich, but there's a big difference between just being rich and then having private jet money.
Yeah, then being fucking filthy rich.
I think one flight on a private jet is at least $4,000. I remember Chrissy Teigen tweeted something about it. And she was like, I have money, but I don't have private jet money.
Wow. She probably has private jet money now, though.
Maybe.
I would hope so.
She probably wants to spend it on more legit stuff.
Yeah, but wow. I think I agree with you. There's a difference between being rich and like loaded.
Yeah, you know these what I mean? People are super fucking rich.
Yeah. So they're up there. They're so, not like, you know, they're not.
If they weren't so sketch, I'd be like, hey, adopt me.
Seriously, it must be nice. But we're talking about this because it is super important to note that their wealth and like their prominence in the community did play a pretty important part in this whole thing. So,
yeah, John Ramsey was a really successful businessman and he founded a company called Advanced Product Group,
which original. Is like
the most generic name. What does that even mean?
Advanced Product Group.
I know. It eventually became part of a bigger company called Access Graphics. It was just basically like computer shit.
Yeah, he's a tech guy for sure. But yeah. Like in 19, what? It was like
96. 19,
yeah, so he's up there.
Yeah.
He's making money.
In 1996, Access Graphics grossed over $1 billion with a B.
Whoop.
And he was named Entrepreneur of the Year by John Ramsey.
Yes.
He was named this by the Boulder Chamber of Commerce.
Damn. So he's like pretty well known for like being rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's important to know. Mm-hmm. So, and Patsy, his wife, she also had some money too. She was born in Gilbert, West Virginia to an upper middle class family. She attended West Virginia University with a BA in journalism in 1978. More important to the media and like what everyone else really knows about Patsy, like no one really gives that much of a fuck about her degree.
Yeah, which is sad because she was smart.
She was smart. But what everyone remembers is that she was a beauty queen. She won Miss West Virginia.
Typical society.
I know, right?
Only caring about the fact that she was pretty.
Yeah. Well, that's like the whole point of this case.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
This is like the whole thing. So she won Miss West Virginia beauty title in 1977. Her sister Pamela Ellen Paugh won Miss South Charleston title at the age of 24 in 1980.
So they had some good genetics in that family.
They're good looking fam.
Yeah.
I mean, JonBenet was like gorgeous. She was a cute little baby.
Yeah. And she followed in her mom's footsteps and did a lot of pageants, too.
Yeah, they're very much into it.
So after the Christmas bustle, the whole family heads over to this family friends. They're friends of the Ramseys, and they're the White family for, like, a dinner party. You know, they do, I guess, eat dinner, do the whole baby Jesus stuff again.
Yeah.
We don't know. Then... You know, maybe sacrifice some goats. Who knows what they
are. Right. We're at a disadvantage. We don't know.
And then they all head home around 9:15 p.m. I've read that JonBenet fell asleep in the car.
Yeah.
I think the kids were really tired.
Yeah.
So, like, they go home. Nothing is supposedly weird. Like, no doors or windows open. Yeah. Everything seems good. Everyone, like, yeah.
Yeah. From everything I've read, that Burke was still awake when they got home and he went to bed around like 9:30, 10. Mm-hmm. And JonBenet fell asleep in the car and she was carried inside by John, who then basically put her to bed. She was last seen by Patsy at 10 p.m. I'm assuming Patsy like went in and checked on her kind of thing.
Yeah. Probably before going to bed.
Yeah. And then John may have played a game with Burke for a couple minutes. He said he'd just gotten a toy and he wanted to put it together. So John did that, and then he went to bed around 10:45. So overall, like, they called it a night. They had an early flight the next morning.
Yeah. And that's Christmas at the Ramseys. That's what we're missing out on.
Yep. Well, I'm not that mad about missing out on that, because between the hours of, like, 10 p.m. on the 25th and 5:30 p.m. or p.m. a.m. on the 26th, shit gets very non-Christmas-like. It goes very, very wrong.
Yeah, so wrong.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
So within the middle of the night, two things happen that people kind of confirm. Mm-hmm. Number one is around midnight, the Ramsey's neighbor, Scott Gibbons, looks out his kitchen window and he sees that the upper kitchen lights in the Ramsey house are on and dimmed low, which, I mean,
yeah,
doesn't seem that uncommon to me. Like, it's the holidays.
Yeah.
I feel like people stay up late. I mean, this dude himself is up late.
Yeah.
Or like maybe they were just doing some Home Alone type shit to deter robbers, like just leaving a light on. My family does that.
Also, like midnight is not that late. Like, yeah, you know, it's not that late. Like, that's not that bad. So anyways, so Scott sees that. So he thinks nothing of it. But then what investigators think around 2 a.m., a neighbor, Melody Stanton, hears a scream. So I don't know if that's a person.
Yeah, I think she later says that she believed it was a child scream, which
interesting
seems a little less in the ordinary.
Yeah, at 2 a.m. hearing a little kid scream.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's not winter break normal. Time is not the same, but children screaming is the same.
Yeah.
But for either reason or some reason, she doesn't think anything of it or does and just decides like, fuck it, I'm going back to sleep.
I kind of think, obviously, because I live in New York, you hear a lot of weird shit, especially screams.
Yeah.
And I've obviously never called the police on someone. And I think it's partially because if you just hear one isolated scream, you're like, that was weird. I don't know. Maybe yeah. I heard it. Maybe it was like an animal.
A movie that someone's watching.
Yeah, you don't know. If you hear one isolated scream, I wouldn't be inclined to call the police. If I was hearing a person screaming bloody murder, then okay, I might be spurred to take action.
Yeah, I feel you. I agree with that. So either way, she was just like, it's not worth calling the cops, which we all agree is like, we get it.
Yeah. So then on December 26th, Patsy wakes up early in the morning around 5:30 because they're getting ready for their flight out to Michigan.
Private jet.
Yeah. She walks downstairs, and as she's walking downstairs, the back staircase.
Okay.
It's now about 5:45 a.m. She notices a 3-page handwritten note on the stairway, and she's like, what? And starts to read it.
Yeah. She sees the note. She reads the first few lines, which was basically like, hey, by the way, we have JonBenet. And she's like, what in the fuck?
Yeah. She like flips out and calls 911 because it's a ransom note.
Yeah, it is a ransom note, a very, very long ransom note. So here's what it says.
Oh my God.
Yeah, here we go.
It takes Adderall. The shit is long.
Yes. Okay. Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We respect your business, but not the country it serves. Oh, I get it. Foreign faction. Like the bookie, right?
Yeah.
It's all coming clear. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed. And if you want to see her, if you want her to see 1997, which it's December 1996 at this time, so you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, and the remaining $18,000 will be in $20 bills. Make sure that you bring an adequate size cachet to the bank. When you get
Oddly specific.
And also, like, so micromanaging. Like, make sure you need an adequate size to the bank.
Yeah, don't tell me what to do, kidnappers.
Seriously. When you get home, you'll put them
on. I don't know what an attaché is. Is it like a briefcase?
I think so. So adequately sized.
So now we know some bougie-ass people wrote this note because he calls it an attaché.
I have no idea. When you get home, you'll put the money in a brown paper bag. This is more my level. Brown paper bag in it. Yeah. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise that you be rested. If we monitor you, Sarah's
hey,
like,
thanks for that.
Yeah. You're like rolling your eyes. I love it. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you to arrange an earlier delivery of the money and hence an earlier pickup of your daughter. Any deviation of my instructions? Yeah. Okay.
I could do an entire episode just on this note.
Oh, so could I. I mean, this note in itself could be an entire episode. Yeah. It's so fucking long.
It's so weird.
Let's see. Okay, you get an earlier pickup of your daughter. Any deviation of my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for a proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise you not to provoke them.
That's kind of a given the fact that you're kidnapping and threatened to murder their
daughter.
Kid.
Yeah.
Oh, no, what do you think? We're friends and we go out to the bar?
I mean...
all of this is so fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, the getting well rested? I'm like, what is this filler line? What is this bullshit? Like,
who's going to be well rested when their daughter is kidnapped in the custody of maniacs?
Also, like, you took her in the middle of the night and then you're gonna call him between 8 a.m and 10 a.m in the morning. Like, there's no time for him to sleep really between that. He woke up at 5:30. Like, is he like gonna get the ransom note and be like, well, they said to rest up, so I'm gonna take a nap? Like,
let me go take a nap while my daughter is about to get
so
murdered.
So weird.
So strange.
Okay.
So let's continue with this note.
Sorry. No, you're good. This note is the worst. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as police or FBI, will result in your daughter being beheaded. Yikes.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but be warned, we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions and you stand a 100% chance of getting her back. You and your family are under constant scrutiny, as well as the authorities. Don't try and grow a brain, John. You're not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing your daughter will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good Southern common sense of yours. It's up to you now, John. Victory. Signed, SBTC.
I mean, so where do we even start with this? We already did.
Off the bat, I read this and it sounded like one of those spam emails you get where someone's like a Nigerian prince, kind of. Yeah. Like, I'm from a foreign land. Like,
I mean, there are just so many strange details in here and so much of it is unnecessary.
There's a bunch of weird shit about this letter. Patsy realizes that this is a ransom note. She yells at John to check on the kids. Like, we're back to Patsy now. And Burke is there.
Yeah, Burke's in his bed.
Yeah, he's
chilling.
They
leave him sleeping in his bed the whole time.
Even though there's possibly a kidnapper.
Yeah, what? She calls the police at 5:52 a.m., seven minutes after finding the note. And here's a clip of the 911 call.
911 emergency.
Sir, we need police.
What's going on?
515th Street.
What's going on there, ma'am?
We have a kidnapping. Hi, please.
Explain to me what's going on, okay?
Sir, we have there's a note left and our daughter's gone.
A note was left and your daughter is gone? How old is your daughter?
6 years old. She's gone. 6 years old.
How long ago was it?
I don't know. I just found the note. And my daughter's gone.
Does it say who took her?
What?
Does it say who took her?
I don't know. There's a ransom note here.
It's a ransom note?
It says SBTC. Victory. Please.
Okay, what's your name? Are you
Patsy Ramsey? I'm the mother. Oh my God. Please.
I'm sending an officer over, okay?
Please.
Do you know how long she's been gone?
No, I don't. Please, we just got out and she's right here. Oh my God, please.
Okay,
please, there's somebody.
I am, honey.
Please.
Take a deep breath for
please.
Me, okay?
Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Patsy.
Which,
sorry.
If you think it sounds familiar, that's because it's in our intro sequence.
It is in our intro sequence, which we realized, like, once we decided to do this.
Yeah, it was like, oh, that's where that's from.
Yeah, it happened to be. So, I think you and I have different opinions on this 911 call.
Mm-hmm.
I think it sounds pretty genuine.
I actually think it sounds kind of forced because how she says, oh, my God, like, oh, my God. And, like, that's not how I would say, oh, my God, if I was generally in distress. I would be like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my fucking God. I wouldn't be like,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
OMG.
It sounds like a excited, oh, my God to me.
Oh, my God.
But I don't really know how Patsy would speak normally. And because in her interview, she's super drugged up and doesn't say a whole lot.
Oh, God, I can get into that. We'll get into that.
But
in part
to
two.
Me, I even before I read a lot into the case, hearing that 911 call, I was like, that, oh, my God, is super weird.
Well, I did read on Bustle, who they kind of did a roundup after the CBS thing came out, was that the 911 operator actually thought that Patsy was, like, not being genuine.
Yeah, they do interview the 911 operator in the CBS documentary. And she did always think it was suspicious.
Okay, well, then there we go. So after Patsy makes that call and just disobeys the hell out of that ransom
note. Yeah, they don't even try.
Yeah, they're like, they wait 7 minutes. They're like, fuck this note.
They also don't even go to the bank.
No. Oh, who goes to the bank for them? I didn't know that
part. No one. They never attempt to withdraw any of the money for this supposed ransom.
That's horseshit because, duh, you're not even supposed to speak to a stray dog, all that stuff. At least follow the most basic of rules and get the money.
Yeah, no.
What the hell? So Patsy's like, fuck this note. She calls the police. And this part is really weird to me. So she calls the police and then she like calls up her friends. She's like, party at my place. My daughter's missing. And she calls up the Whites, who she went over to their house the night before.
Uh-huh.
And the Fernies. And they tell them, she tells them to come over.
That is the weirdest thing to me because who thinks My daughter is in grave danger and was kidnapped by dangerous people. Let me bring some more people into my house that has been obviously broken into.
Yeah, into a crime scene.
It's like, so fucking weird.
There's so many things about that. And also, like, I feel like in times of crisis, I'm not going to call, like, I don't know, my friends. You know what I mean? Like, I'd call, like, my mom.
Wow, you just really don't trust your friends
Sorry. I'm sorry, Sarah. I wouldn't call you.
Like, I mean, I don't know. I would probably handle it internally with my family if I truly believe that my daughter was kidnapped and at the risk of being beheaded.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing. Like, they specifically said, don't call anyone, and you did call the police, which, okay, get that.
I would call the cops, too, but
I would call the cops, too, but then you call your friends? It's like, what the fuck?
So weird.
Yeah, so weird.
Starts weird, gets weirder. So Fleet White, when he arrives at about 6:30, shortly after that, he takes it upon himself to check the basement because actually his daughter Daphne had gone missing a year before John Ramsey's murder.
What the fuck?
But she was eventually found in their basement. Okay. So naturally
alive,
he's like,
I'm assuming
alive.
Yeah.
So he's like, all right, let me check the basement.
Yeah.
So he goes down to the basement, he calls her name, and he's actually the only one who calls out for JonBenet.
Oh.
Yeah. He goes down, he walks to the train room, then to the wine cellar, which you have to get through the train room to. And the wine cellar, the train room has windows. The wine cellar doesn't have any windows. Yeah. I guess, Hannah, you work in wine. Yeah. You don't want that sunlight, right?
You don't. Yeah. You don't have usually windows in a wine cellar.
Okay. So it's really dark in there. He steps in, pitch black. He can't find a light switch. He can't see anything. Mm-hmm. So he turns around and goes back up the steps.
Damn. Missed her by that much. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So they all wait for this ransom call between 8 and 10 a.m. per the letter. And obviously this call never comes because, like, this case would be that done, basically. Yeah. And first of all, I was, like, kind of pissed about this part because it's like, who does this fucking ransom person think they are? 8 and 10 a.m.? Like, it's like the cable man. Where it's like, I'll be there between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m.
Yeah,
like,
what other appointments do you have in this day?
I mean, seriously. Like, you have one job and it's the ransom. So, whatever. Whatever.
Yeah. So after the Ramseys get ghosted by the ransom guy.
Sad times.
SMH, it be your own kidnappers. the cops leave to go back to the station and make a plan of attack, and they leave one detective, Linda Arndt, with the family and friends.
Yeah. And around 1 p.m., Linda Arndt is the only one there, and everyone's getting super antsy. So Linda's, like, trying to give them shit to do to, like, occupy their time. And she tells John and Fleet White, who, again, friend from the Christmas party, the one who went downstairs, to search the house from top to bottom for anything that's out of place. So John immediately heads to the basement and starts a search there. At 1:04 p.m., John and Fleet head to the wine cellar, and that's they surprisingly find the light or whatever.
Well, John finds the light. He knows it's his house.
He's like a frequenter in the wine cellar. And John finds his daughter's lifeless body wrapped underneath a white sheet. He screams, "Oh my God, my baby!" He rips the duct tape that's on her over her mouth. He rips it off.
There's duct tape over her mouth.
Yeah, poor baby. And he picks her up and brings her upstairs, where Linda Arndt instructs him to leave her at the top of the steps.
Like, okay.
Okay. All right. So she then picks up the body again. And by the way, John doesn't have gloves on or anything. Like,
yeah.
They're just, like, touching this dead girl.
This is fucking amateur hour.
Yeah, this is bullshit. I mean, this is textbook police work. You know how many episodes of Law & Order Sarah and I have seen? So fucking
many. Yeah, like, Ice-T would never do this shit. Come on.
No,
step
never.
Step it up, Boulder PD.
Never. So, anyways, Linda moves the body to the living room where, you know, the whole fucking PTA is there at this point. Like, all of their neighborhood is there. And then she lets Patsy cry and sob on top of JonBenet's body while she holds it on the living room floor.
Yeah, Patsy basically just collapses over her daughter's dead body.
Yeah, basically.
Which, I get the impulse, but also, like...
Yeah. Holy it's also
shit.
Like...
Like, what the fuck, Linda?
Yeah, Linda's really to blame in this situation because, like, I feel like...
Oh my God, secure a crime scene, bitch.
Yeah. That should be, like, on a shirt or something.
Yeah.
Secure a crime scene, bitch. But actually, that's, like, the real problem. Because I feel like John and Patsy reacted as parents normally would. But Linda, like, not so much. I'm like, girl.
Yeah.
At what point, like, she should have told them, if you find anything, don't fucking touch it. Like, come get me.
I mean, I guess she wasn't expecting them to find anything. Because by all indications, JonBenet was not in the house.
Well, I mean, one could argue that the police should have searched it a little bit.
Yeah, that's so weird. Why would you not search the house, especially when you know these people's friends had their daughter go missing?
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you just search to be safe?
More thoroughly.
Also, why wouldn't the Ramseys have searched their own house to be safe?
I have questions.
They never, like, they go into Burke's room. They supposedly don't wake him up.
Yeah.
They're never like, hey, Burke, have you seen JonBenet? Have you seen your sister? Is she in here? Apparently she used to sleep in his bed sometimes.
Oh, shit.
Or like in his room. Yeah. They're never, they don't ask him.
I feel like, yeah, I agree with you. That would be a logical thing to like go check every room.
Yeah.
Every single room thoroughly. Yeah. I mean,
like, I'm just going to take this foreign faction at their word.
I mean, there's a lot of issues. I mean,
it's mad weird. Shortly after 1 p.m., John finds JonBenet's body.
Yeah.
Her wrists are tied with, I think, a sort of nylon rope. She has what they call a garrote, which I've never actually heard before. Yeah,
the, like, stick thing.
Yeah, but it's, again, like a nylon rope attached to a piece of wood around her neck. And then later in the autopsy, they discover that she'd suffered a large blow to the head, which wasn't immediately apparent because there was no external bleeding. She also had ligature marks on her neck and wrists, a few spots of blood in her underwear, and
just a variety.
It's just honestly a super, really, really brutal.
Yeah.
What happened to her?
Yeah. I mean, it's really fucking sad. And I think a lot of people forget how fucking sad this case is, because that's one thing I didn't really think about.
I know. People just go into like kind of like true crime porn with this case.
Yeah.
And it is really interesting and super bizarre. But when I was reading the autopsy or Kohler's recounting of the autopsy report, there was a lot of details in there that I wish I did not know. It is really graphic and just awful. And then you think this is a six-year-old
girl.
Yeah,
it's just really, really sad.
It is really sad.
Yeah. And everyone at this point, so now the body's been found, it's laying on the living room floor, everyone's really distraught, and the Ramsey house basically just descends into fucking chaos.
Yeah, even John describes that whole scene afterwards. He finds the body as just chaos.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. So the cops get called back to the house at 1:05. Not too far after, they find that one of the windows in the basement is partially broken. John says he broke it over the summer one time when he locked himself out.
Yeah, he apparently used to do that a lot. He would lock himself out a lot.
What the fuck? So rich, and then so smart.
Then he'd have to like break into his own house.
Yeah. So that's, he said that he did that. He broke it over the summer, which like fix your window, man. Or like get a Heidi key. Like simple
one of those,
solution.
Like rock thingies.
Yeah, everyone had one of those like in the 90s, I feel like. So there's also a weirdly placed Samsonite suitcase that's found in the train room in the middle of the floor, like against the window. So it's like leaning up against the window.
Yeah, kind of leaning up against the wall right under the window, which they note is a weird place for a suitcase to be.
Which is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they also find the grout of what you talked about. So
it's basically like, for me to describe it, because I saw pictures of it, basically, they had taken a paintbrush that was lying in a paint tray in the basement.
It was Patsy's.
Yeah, it was Patsy's. They broke off the brush, so they took the handle. They tie a nylon string around the middle of it, so it's perpendicular, like a T shape.
Okay.
And then they had used that to strangle JonBenet, and I guess the point of using that
to make it tighter.
Yeah, you can kind of pull tighter on the wood. Because it's almost like a handle.
Yeah. Oh, God. And so does it also like cut your hands too? Because when you're pulling that tight on string or nylon, it like cut into your hands.
Yeah, that's my concern when I'm committing a murder.
I'm just like thinking,
is this going to be uncomfortable for me?
Look, man, I don't know. These people are fucking crazy. Yeah. But either way, it's really sad. I read that it was, I think it was on the CBS document too. It was so tight around her neck that John didn't even notice it at first.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like, it dug in her skin.
It, like, dug into her skin. That's what I read on Bustle.
Oh,
so, very sad. So, they find the body. And pretty much from that point, that's where this mystery and the crime of the century really just begins.
Yeah. But before we get into that shit show,
Yeah.
Let's just provide a little background on JonBenet, who is the victim throughout this entire ensuing media circus.
Yes. And everyone, like we said, kind of forgets that. So JonBenet was born on August 6, 1990 in Atlanta, Georgia. So her name is a combination of her dad's first and middle name.
Which is like, wow. I feel like if she had lived to be older, she would have some serious baggage about the fact that her parents obviously wanted her to be a boy.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Well, there's also John Andrew, who's her his oldest son. Like, come on. Can we just like get a little bit creative on here?
Yes. I do think let's take the two most masculine names and just feminize it with a vaguely French accent and a useless accent aigu. Like, what the fuck?
I don't understand. Are they French? Like, do you know? Did you major in French?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I mean, no, they just took two names and put an accent on it, like Beyoncé's name. Her family's not French.
That's true. Oh, Beyoncé's French name.
No, it's not. It has an accent on it, though. That's what I'm saying. But it's like, you can take anything, put an accent on it. Like, Raven Simone has an accent on the E. It's like, you don't need to be French for that.
Damn.
You just need to be weird.
You should start a French podcast, because I don't know anything about that. So she was basically like the all-American girl. She had blonde hair, blue eyes. She's this beauty queen.
Speaking of the beauty queen, I mean, this played a large role in the media circus, but I don't really feel like going into it that much because to me, it's not really a big deal. It was obviously a big deal at the 90s because we didn't have toddlers and tiaras back then.
I hate that show.
Yeah, but to me, I'm like, whatever. Shoes and pageants, you know, what else is new?
Yeah.
But she was in a lot of them.
So many.
She was Little Miss Colorado. Are these all the ones that she won?
I think so. Oh my God. She had winning titles. She's a fucking boss.
Little Miss Colorado, Little Miss Charlevoix. Colorado State All-Star Kids Cover Girl.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
Couple other shit. she was basically Patsy's pride and joy. And I feel like Patsy was sort of living vicariously through JonBenet a little bit through these pageants.
I kind of agree.
Because there are kind of mixed reports on whether JonBenet even liked doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously her mom said that she loved it, but one of the Ramsey's former friends in the CBS documentary said that she'd expressed to her that she like didn't really like to do it.
Interesting. Yeah. John Ramsey kind of makes a comment like that in his book, basically saying that they kind of did it for fun. But I don't know if Patsy is the kind of person who does pageants for fun.
If you're winning all these pageants, I don't think that you're doing it for fun.
Yeah, no.
Because you have to spend money on coaches, on all these outfits, learning whatever routine or talent or thing that you're showing off.
Yeah.
I don't think that you're going to come in casually and win.
And I don't think six-year-olds are like, you know what's fun? Like getting primped for so long and like not being able to do anything really except be beautiful.
Skeptical.
Yeah, very weird. Patsy was definitely your typical stage mom. She spent a shit ton of time and money on JonBenet's wardrobe, hair, makeup. I get very like Amy Poehler vibes and Mean Girls, where she's like in the crowd.
Yeah, like
doing dancing. The dance. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. So JonBenet is a winner at age 6, and she's being groomed for the rest of her career. I mean, pretty much. Like, so this is just beginning. Days before she was murdered, she was named Little Miss Christmas, and she was featured in several magazines and newspapers around the area, the Boulder area.
Yeah, so safe to say she was pretty well known.
Yeah. Media gold, if you would say. Yeah. She was a cutie, big hair, tons of makeup, baby tooth smile. And so she was found murdered in her parents' basement. And everyone is now freaking the fuck out. The cops have finally secured the entire house.
Great idea.
Yeah. Like 8 hours later. And they're now trying to figure out what happened. Investigators say that JonBenet was hit over the head and strangled. When the autopsy comes in, her cause of death is asphyxia by strangulation associated with a craniocerebral trauma. So basically, her brain is swelling from the hit with the blunt object, but the strangling is actually what ended up killing her.
Yeah, to be fair, though, the blow to the head would have killed her eventually.
Yeah.
It's believed that she was knocked unconscious and she never recovered and her brain was filling with blood. Ugh. So if she had not received medical attention, that blow to the head would have killed her.
So you think that maybe if she had received it, she'd probably have lived? Or do they talk about that? Or is it that bad of a hit?
She was knocked unconscious, they believe.
Oh.
So if she had been rushed to the hospital, they might have been able to stop the swelling.
Yeah.
But she wasn't, and then was strangled. But I don't know. I just kind of brought that up just to say that the head injury probably would have killed her.
Yeah, by eventually.
Itself.
Yeah, definitely.
So this was overkill.
For sure.
I hope that was not a bad pun. Sorry, guys.
No, I think that's like an actual like term that they use. They use it in Criminal Minds when someone like stabs someone like 50 zillion times.
Okay.
There we go.
I'll go with that.
Okay.
Also, I just want to kind of say we are trying to go over the facts of the case, but. Yeah. These are so sketchy because depending on what you believe, you can interpret the facts in any way you want.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the autopsy does say that she was hit in the head and strangled, but we don't know really for sure which happened first. And you can kind of choose whatever you want to believe to back up what you believe happened. I think this case is such a classic case of confirmation bias.
Yeah.
Like, definitely. You can really interpret any piece of evidence any way that you want to fit what you think happened. And a lot of that does happen.
Yes. This case, researching this case, Sarah and I talked about it. It was really hard for us. So just a heads up, we're trying to get these facts as good as we can because there is a lot of bias surrounding this case.
Yeah. Also, this is really graphic.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
So they do find a little bit of blood in her underwear. It's not a lot. It's a couple of spots.
Okay.
The autopsy concluded that there was no evidence of rape, but they couldn't rule out that she had been sexually assaulted at some point. And they believe that she was assaulted with the paintbrush handle that was used in the garage.
Ugh. Owie.
And Dr. Werner Spitz, who is a leading expert, and he was on the panel of the CBS documentary, believes she was still alive when this alleged assault happened, and he thinks it happened very close to the time of her death.
That's fucking horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really bad.
There's no semen found at the scene, even though there was evidence that there had been a vaginal injury. Also, the American Crime Museum said that at the time of the autopsy, it appeared her vaginal area had been wiped clean.
Which is weird as fuck, but also this crime scene is...
Everything about it is a mess.
So very not normal. It's just, yeah. So then another thing that the autopsy revealed was that she had pineapple that was undigested in her stomach, which like doesn't seem too alarming to normal people, but police are kind of like, the fuck is this? Like, why is there pineapple in there?
Yeah. No one claims to remember JonBenet eating pineapple. The Whites didn't serve it at their party. And it's undigested, which means she had to have eaten it close to the time of her death.
Yeah, and that's not like a Christmas night food, I don't think.
I don't think so either, but then again, the Ramses do say that she liked it, so...
Yeah, so it's like, okay. But it's just a weird situation because there's a bowl when the police get to the crime scene, which, of course, they didn't treat as a crime scene early on. There's a bowl of chopped up pineapple on the kitchen table with a spoon. So we can pretty much assume that's what JonBenet was eating out of. But when the bowl is later set for fingerprints, only Patsy's and Burke's fingerprints are found on the bowl.
Yeah, and Patsy denies feeding her pineapple that night. And it's like, well, who did?
Yeah, because Burke's nine. Did he, like, get up, chop up the
and
pineapple?
And why are your fingerprints on the bowl?
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, who dares feed this child fruit?
Investigators concluded that her time of death was sometime between 10 p.m. on Christmas Day and 6 a.m. on December 26th. The police continue to search for DNA or evidence. They find a flashlight on the countertop in the kitchen that a lot of people think was the blunt object that JonBenet was hit with. The Ramses said that the flashlight wasn't theirs, though.
Yeah. I mean, there's like a lot of stuff around the flashlight, I feel like.
Yep.
Yeah. The flashlight is its own. Its own mystery.
It's its own episode.
It really is. They tested JonBenet.
That doesn't even make any sense, though, because if you do believe that there was an intruder. Mm-hmm. They leave the ransom note. There were some materials that they took with them. I don't think they found the duct tape, for instance.
No.
So why would they leave a flashlight?
Like the thing that actually like could have killed her.
Yeah.
Like,
it doesn't make sense.
Nothing about this case makes sense at this point in my life. Like my life doesn't make sense. And it's partly due to this case. So they tested for JonBenet Ramsey's DNA and they don't find anything. But the investigators conclude that the flashlight could have still been used to hit her over the head, but maybe it didn't split the skin. Therefore, there's no like internal DNA, like blood or anything.
I think they also don't find any fingerprints on it, which is weird because you'd expect to find some at least
something.
On the button.
Yeah, you would
where
think.
You, and also, unless it had been wiped clean.
Or if you hit her on the head, like maybe some hair, things like that too. Like there's kind of something
but
left
they
behind.
Don't even find fingerprints.
Yeah, it's just clean completely. So They're also still looking for signs of an intruder because the Ramseys are like, we didn't fucking do this. We had nothing to do with this. Mm-hmm. So they're looking into that still.
Well, the police are looking for signs of an intruder and they seem to zero in on this broken window. I mean, it makes sense.
That they find in the basement. Yeah, that makes sense.
They think that someone maybe there's a grate to that window outside. So they think someone like lifted the grate,
opened
the window, slid through the window, and then later used that Samsonite luggage
to like hoist himself out.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
To hoist himself up.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. Okay. So they see that. They're still searching
the
house.
So there is a possibility, even though John thinks that all the doors and everything were locked later, he thinks that, but
you wouldn't check your basement. Like,
yeah, and there was that open window that theoretically someone could get in that way.
And that he admitted to breaking. Like, so.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a few other things to know about the Ramsey house. I mean, obviously it's huge and it's covered in really, really thick carpet. So someone could have broken in, hopped up, you know, from the basement to the second floor, and it would have been easy to sneak around in because that carpet would have made it easier.
That said, though, the Ramsey house is like a maze. I think it would take someone who was pretty intimately familiar with the layout to get around and avoid detection.
Yeah, even the basement was a fucking maze.
Yeah.
Like, even What's-His-Face came in and couldn't find the goddamn light. So
yeah, you're right. Their friend couldn't even find the light
to
in
the wine cellar.
So like, we really think this random foreign faction is coming in and
knows where everything
exactly.
is. Yeah, so weird. So the police discovered another weird thing is that they discovered the ransom note on a pad of paper with a pen that was already in the house.
Yeah, it was Patsy's Sharpie, Patsy's pad of paper.
Damn.
I mean, John worked for a computer company, so obviously people had access to computers in late 1996.
Yeah.
Who the hell is handwriting a ransom note?
Why don't you bring a pre-typed one?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I guess... And
you're not going to bring your own ransom note materials to the kidnapping? That seems like a major oversight.
I mean, yeah. But there's only so much you can do, like, and bring on the way to commit a felony, you know?
I suppose.
You have, like, a backpack.
But then you have to think the nylon rope was found in the house.
Mm-hmm.
The paintbrush was found in the house.
How planned is this?
The pad was found in the house. So you really think these kidnappers came in and they're like, all right, we have this plan. We're going to kidnap this girl, hold her for ransom, but we're going to do it with stuff we find in the house. Like, they're just MacGyvering this kidnapping?
Pretty much.
When you think about it that way, it doesn't even make any sense.
That's a good way to put it, actually. None of this makes sense at all.
Another fun note about the pad is that they find in later pages of the same pad what appears to be the beginning of a practice note. Yeah, because it says Mr. and Mrs. I, which experts believe was not actually an I, but the downstroke of a capital
of an R.
Like when you start writing a capital R.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what?
They leave the note on the stairs, which I kind of still, I personally think that's weird because
it was the back stairs too.
Which
the
is
the back
even
spiral staircase. It wasn't their main staircase.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
So I think that's weird. Like, why not leave it on the kitchen table where someone's guaranteed to find it?
Somewhere even more out in the open on her bed.
Yeah, anywhere. Or just somewhere that, like, they knew a parent would find it. Like, what if it had been, like, Bert coming down and he just, like, completely walked by it and he would never think to tell anyone? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just weird.
Yeah, the letter was also super sketch in itself. I mean, there were so many things that jumped out to me and investigators.
Which is one and the same, really.
Oh, yes, thank you. I'm an official investigator for the BPD. Thank you.
Yeah, you're honestly probably better so at this point in time than Linda.
I mean, we talked about the wording and just how the choices in diction are super weird.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a couple random words that are misspelled.
Yeah.
They misspell business, I'm pretty sure, in the first line. And experts think that was an attempt to make them sound foreign.
Oh.
But then they correctly spell a lot of more complicated
words
later in the letter.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And also the ransom, $118,000 in cash.
Weird.
Very specific, inconvenient for the bank teller.
So rude. Like,
what if you didn't have $18,000 in 20s?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's not really important.
But
what is important is that this $118,000 is the exact dollar amount John had just received as a bonus that year.
Yeah.
And it was commonly known because of that thing
Entrepreneur
from the,
of the year.
Yeah, the Boulder Chamber of Commerce. It was commonly known that John's company was worth $1 billion. So why wouldn't you like hit him up for more?
Yeah. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very weird number. And that's just one of the many things. One thing that stuck out to me is like the brutality of it all.
Yeah.
They talk about chopping her fucking head off, which is crazy. That's like what they do to like in like Al Qaeda.
I think ransom notes usually specify the method of execution that they're going to use.
This is the longest ransom note in recorded American history.
Yeah, I think it's 300 something words.
Yes, and it's 2.5 pages and it's fucking insane.
And most of it's extraneous. You could just accomplish it in three lines. We have your daughter. We want the money. We're going to call you between 8 and 10 a.m. for instructions.
That's it. There's no parts about resting. We could just keep that down. So they just like keep mentioning how they just hate John Ramsey. And how he better not mess with them and they'll keep JonBenet's body, which is really fucked up. I mean, obviously all this is fucked up, but they literally said if John talks to a stray dog, then they're going to chop off his daughter's head. Like, what the fuck is this? You're dragging animals into this?
My English teacher is going to be so proud of me. Shouts out Mr. Weinstein. Like all that parallel structure. Like if we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you do anything like this, she dies. Like that repetition of the she dies is also really weird.
It is super weird. And here's the thing that you were talking about earlier that I'm happy we're getting to. It's weird because it's oddly similar to some movies.
And the Ramseys were movie fans.
Yes, they were movie fans. So the line, if we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies, though we are both saying it is kind of a good line, the way it's used in the repetition. It sounds like if you talk to anyone, even if it's a Pekingese on a lamppost, the girl dies. And that's from the movie Dirty Harry, which came out in the 70s. Don't try to grow a brain, John, resembles the line. Don't attempt to grow a brain from the movie Speed, which came out in 1994. And it's basically a ripoff of pretty much every ransom movie ever.
Yeah, I mean, this whole letter is weird. Like, as so I mentioned before, it sounds like it was written by someone who's kind of rich and educated.
But also, like, can't spell. And
yeah, it's a mess. It's super weird.
Yeah. And the words in there are just, like, not run-of-the-mill vocab. It's just strange. So
yeah, it's pretty eloquent.
Yeah, it actually...
They use a lot of big words. Let me see if I can... Recall
it back to like 8 pages ago because the letter is itself like 8 pages. They also
We talked about the attaché, but like
annoying.
Oh my god, it's just so
some
so
weird things.
Countermeasures.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say.
Yeah,
I also think that like the 99% chance of killing your daughter and 100% chance of getting her back, like just that
seems unnecessary.
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, it's just like if you do what we say, you'll get your kid back.
Like, yeah, I feel like most people, even if you have never had a loved one held for ransom, they kind of get the implicit gist, which is follow our instructions so your loved one doesn't die.
Yeah.
There's so many like qualifiers and weird shit in here.
There's just
that it's over explaining. To me, it's like when someone is lying and you know they're lying because they're giving you too much information.
Yes. There's also a few things mentioned in the letter that are just like blatantly untrue, which is kind of like the lying thing that you just said. So that works.
I guess the untrue things could point to an intruder because for number one, they mentioned John having good Southern common sense. But anyone who knew John would know that he's from Michigan and he only moved to Atlanta later in life. So I guess that could point to the intruder theory.
Yeah, I mean, it could, but it's also...
Because if someone close to John wrote the note, you'd think that, you know, they would know that.
Yeah, true. But also, I thought the saying was like Southern hospitality.
It totally is.
I don't know why. Yeah, I mean,
I know. It's like... say please and thank you when you deliver our note. Like, that's not hospitality. It's not. Yeah, I mean, I think we've pretty much covered the weirdness of the note.
Yeah.
We did spend a lot of time on it this episode, but that's because it is really important in part two when we discuss who we think wrote it.
Yeah, I almost was just like, we've really beat this note to death, but I do this time.
It's okay. I was talking to Mike, our podcast producer, about this case, and like, yeah, Hannah and I are just gonna record JonBenet Ramsey and really knock this out. And I was like, oh.
You posted like a meme on the Instagram, it was a Princess Diana, and I was like, I'm dead. And you texted me and you were like, what? So basically what we're saying is we'll come back to this note later, but just to leave you with it, the ransom ends with the words, victory, SBTC, which there are thousands of theories on.
It's so weird to end a ransom note in victory.
Yeah.
Because then right before that, they're basically like, hey, you know, we've threatened this heinous act against your beloved daughter.
Yeah.
But if you listen to us, it's chill. You have 100% of getting her back. And then they're like, be smart, John. Victory. Who are they wishing victory on? It's kind of weird.
I almost
read it like victory to you if you do this stuff.
Or like victory to them because they're going to get the money or the dead girl.
And I don't know what SBTC means.
No one does. It's Reddit is a dark place trying to figure that out.
One theory actually about SBTC, there was this couple that used to dress up at the Ramsay Christmas parties as like Santa. There was this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like Santa. Fuck, was his name Bill or Bob? I don't know. It was something like Santa Bill. And then his wife's name started with a T. Something Claus.
And that was
I wish I remembered, but that
was like someone
theory.
Who got like accused too. They like turned on their friends.
But that was the only interpretation of SBTC.
That made sense to you?
That made sense. Ironically, it did come from John Ramsey, but I was like, I guess
consider
that makes
the source.
Sense.
Yeah. Interesting. It's just, there's
but
so
why
many
would,
theories.
Why would you choose that acronym? That's so weird. Like Santa Bill and whatever, Teresa Claus. That's not their names. I fucked it up, but.
Yeah, no, but so I can be mean. I read one that was like, victory is like what people say at the end of a sailing race. And like John liked to sail. All of it
really?
Is just, yeah, it's just, but it was so obscure. Like the whole thing is just too obscure for me to take seriously or like give it any value to. So no one's figured it out. If you think you can figure it out, shoot us a DM.
I know. It's truly like Da Vinci Code level shit.
Yeah. Maybe we should put that as like a question on Instagram. Like, what do people think it means?
We'll do that.
Okay. Now we know. So everyone answer our question.
All right. But that's pretty much all you need to know about the actual crime itself.
Yes.
So let's just fucking end it here.
let's get this show on the road.
So, yeah.
Yeah. This case is a fucking monster. Like, that's what Sarah and I call it in text. And part two is going to be very lit.
Lit, indeed.
So lit.
So stay tuned for next episode when we go into the media circus, which is an integral part of this case.
Yeah.
And then we'll go into theories, including our hot takes.
Our hot takes. And before you do that, please give us a follow on social, NATC pod. Give us 5 stars on whatever you're listening to us on. All that good stuff that we say at the end of every episode.
Yep. Follow us on Instagram, NATC pod, Twitter, same thing, Facebook, NATC podcast.
Email
us. If you
want
to hit us with an email, it's NATC@betches.com.
With an E, not bitches.
Yeah, we
don't
we
call
keep
us
it
names.
Mostly consistent with our emails.
We do.
And
so, I want you
stay
to
tuned. Go listen to part 2.
Yep. Listen to it in order, for sure.
Yeah.
People, don't do that. You're fucking psychos.
All right. Thanks for listening to this episode of Not Another True Crime Podcast. And remember, if you like weird shit, you know where to find us. Betches.